Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 9th of December 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking Newspaper and the Winchester Talking Magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number could also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are Santas swarm the city streets, Panto hits the yellow brick road, and editor tries her hand at talking newspaper. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather?
Santas swarm the city streets. Hundreds of Santas have descended on Winchester for the annual fun run. Now in its 14th year, the event saw hundreds of runners all dressed like Father Christmas in the traditional red clothes and the caps with lots of white fur. Well, fake fur. to raise money for the hospices Naomi House and Jack Space. The Yuletide Dash kicked off last Sunday morning and saw runners take off from the start line in the Broadway on a 5 kilometre run that took them past a number of Winchester's famous landmarks, such as the King Alfred statue and Winchester Cathedral. The runners finished the course outside the Guildhall, where a flurry of fake snow greeted them as they crossed the finish line. Event funders Charlotte Patrick said, "It's our jolliest event of the year, with hundreds of Santas running the streets. The fundraising efforts from the runners have been amazing, and this will make a difference to the children, young adults and their families here at Naomi House and Jack Space. The charity provides hospice care to life-limited and life-threatened children and young adults who have complex care needs. And there are half a dozen fantastic pictures, all very red, of Santas triumphantly raising their hands in triumph, smiling Santas who've lowered their beards so that we can see them smiling, young Santas getting lifts on the rides on the shoulders of older Santas, a Santa with his muscles showing how strong he is, and the nicest one, I think, is of a lot of Santas, many of whom are carrying little baby Santas and very young Santas who are either sucking on dummies or smiling or looking a bit astonished. And then there's one of the finishing line when all that fake snow descends on the Santas.
Okay, let's have the second story, please, Noel.
Yes, Panto hits the yellow brick road. The Theatre Royal has revealed its cast for this year's traditional pantomime in Winchester, The Wizard of Oz. The Panto will be on stage at the Winchester Theatre in Drury Street from Saturday, December the 3rd to Monday, January the 2nd. The Wizard of Oz tells the story of Dorothy, who follows the yellow brick road to the magical land of Oz, where she hopes to find the wizard, who will help her get home to Kansas. On her way, she makes three friends, who also have wishes they hope the wizard will grant. This year, the lead Dorothy is played by Abigail Coy in her professional debut after recently graduating from Liverpool Theatre School and relocating from Lancashire to London. Abigail will be joined by Max Gallagher as Scarecrow, who has performed across the UK in plays including Warhorse, James and the Giant Peach and The History Boys. He has also worked as a lyricist, arranger and musical director supervisor. Libby Gore, who starred as the lead role Aladdin last year, appears as Rusty the Tin Man. Her Winchester debut was in 2019's Dick Whittington as Fairy Bow Bells, before she returned as Dame Dolly Donut and Princess in 2020's Four Dames in Search of a Panto. Meanwhile, Julian Eardley, the pantomime dame, returns for his 13th pantomime at the theatre and to reprise the role of Lion, which he played in 2009's Wizard of Oz, as well as appearing as Aunt Em. Finally, Katie Stasi steps into Glinda the Good Witch's shoes and Ellie McMahon plays the Wicked Witch of the West. Last year, Katie graduated from Performance Preparation Academy in Guildford and in December played the lead role, Dick Whittington, in London's Stanley Arts Theatre's first full-scale pantomime. Ellie has played numerous pantomime roles, including Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella, as well as performing in the West End and with the National Symphony Orchestra and on a cruise ship. The Wizard of Oz comes from the same team behind previous pantomimes, Dick Whittington and Aladdin. Writer and director James Barry and composer Simon Slater have incorporated jokes, original songs and audience participation. It will also feature support cast members Lewis Galvin, Elizabeth Davis, Holly Gardner-Hall, Jessica Thomas, Hannah Exworth, Lucy Hurt, Peter Lucas, and returning cast members Olivia Day, Maria Webb, and Nina Miller. Accessible performances are available, including relaxed, audio described, and British Sign Language interpreted, as well as the ability to watch at home with live stream performances.
The next story is quite near home. What have you got, Jane?
Very appropriately, editor tries her hand at talking newspaper. Winchester's charitable talking newspaper played host to a special guest last week. Hampshire Chronicle editor Kimberly Barber stopped by at the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper Association to meet the volunteers. She even recorded several articles from the paper, as well as some letters and her monthly opinion piece, and I'm sure you will have heard those. The charity, which operates from Unit 12 in Winnell Road, Winnell Valley Road, Winnell, provides weekly recordings of extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle and a monthly magazine to those in the Winchester area. It is run by a group of volunteers and organised by the chairman, John Richards. The recordings are free of charge to any blind or partially sighted person, either through a memory stick or on its website, winchestertalkingnews.com. Kimberly said, "It was a delight to meet the dedicated group at Winchester Talking News. They really do a smashing job reading the newspaper and bringing it alive for people who may otherwise not be able to access it. I'm not a great radio voice, unlike some of the wonderful people who give their time each week. I'm grateful to them for helping to promote my newspaper's work and hope to work more closely with them in the new year." And this is accompanied by a large photo of the very table at which we are currently sitting with the cups of water and a couple of bits of coffee there and pencils and the newspaper. And the readers who were reading at the time, Jane Rutter, John Richards, the chairman, and in the middle is Kimberly, who also read that week, and John Parker, who was the presenter for the week and whose son, I believe, receives the newspaper, and Tony Bergstrom, who's been reading with the newspaper for so long and has such a wonderful reading voice.
And that concludes our headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Belgarum diary, first person and editorial comment, and we'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Winfield, Peter Ward Winfield, peacefully at Brendan Care, Otterbourne Hill, aged 90. Allen, Ruth Beryl Allen, peacefully in Basingstoke Hospital after a short illness, aged 86. Goodenough, Alan Goodenough, peacefully in his sleep. Heward, James Heward, ARCA, peacefully at home, aged 91. Houghton, David Houghton, peacefully at home, after a long illness, aged 86. Mallinson, Jacqueline Mallinson, peacefully aged 62. And Pugh, Rosalind Ros Pugh, peacefully aged 76. Now Heather has Christian comment.
It's written this week by Nigel Hemming, a senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church, and it's headed Darkness to Light. Last Sunday at Winchester Vineyard Church, we heard about the amazing work of International Justice Mission, IJM, in protecting the victims of modern slavery and exploitation. IJM intervenes in some of the most dangerous, dark, and devastating situations to rescue and restore victims, prosecute perpetrators, strengthen justice systems, and advocate for safety around the world. For over a decade, a small group of local Winchester Christians have met most months to pray about human slavery, trafficking, and justice. They faithfully support and pray for the work of IJM and other vital organisations in this field. On Sunday, our guest speaker, Eleanor Smith, told us stories of young people literally saved from some of the most desperate circumstances imaginable. The statistics are horrifying, but also inspiring. In 2021 alone, IJM rescued 10,000 victims of violence and repression, and convicted 1,800 perpetrators in local courts of law. In describing the ethos behind IJM's work, Eleanor quoted these words from Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from the darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion. This well-known prophetic passage beautifully describes the heart of God to reach out and rescue the lost, the least and the lonely. The key verbs are proclaim, bind up, release, comfort and provide, active words for a God of action who doesn't just talk about rescue but actually gets involved. This passage also formed Jesus' manifesto quoted in the synagogue at the start of his public ministry, Luke 4:18-19. He was a man of action who came to enact God's purposes. And he didn't just talk about the kingdom of God, he demonstrated it in the most practical and miraculous ways by healing the sick, casting out evil spirits, and even raising the dead. Jesus' track record was of changed lives and people set free. He empowered his disciples to do the same, then let them loose in his name. Today, Jesus' followers, both locally and globally, continue to play an active role, helping those in need, be it physically, spiritually, or materially. There is still plenty of darkness, but Jesus' arrival, which we celebrate at Christmas, represents God's light and hope for a broken world. As Eleanor from IJM told us, we are Advent people, living between now and not yet. We know that the world we live in still has much brokenness and despair. Yet at the same time, we also know that God is on the move, working through his followers who choose in his name not to just proclaim some good news, but to actually live it out practically as we bind up, release, comfort and provide for those in need.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is The Editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. There are 8 letters this week, and Noel will start.
Yes, Tony Gaster writes about Friarsgate. When I came to Winchester in 1979, I was a patient at the excellent Friars Gate practice. 5 years later, I was transferred to St Paul's, and not long after the Friars Gate practice moved out. For quite a time, the building seems not to have been used, and it's now an eyesore. I suppose it's part of the endless debate for city development. Successive councils have done nothing except spend huge amounts of our money on consultants. Surely our city needs more homes, and especially places for those on low incomes, to live. How much longer must we wait before work gets started on that part of our city and is revived? It's Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester. And there's a note from the letter editor who says the Friars Gate building is due to be demolished soon to be replaced by a temporary park pending the long-term redevelopment of the area.
Over to you, Jane, for the second letter.
And this letter from Kim Gottlieb is a further letter about Silver Hill. The City Council is about to conclude its search for a developer for Silver Hill. It's not been a good process, and its arcane criteria have excluded many fine developers, especially local ones. Nor has it been a quick process. 4.5 years and a lot of money has been dissipated by council officers and well-paid consultants since the supplementary planning document was adopted. I know that the leader of the council cares about the city's heritage, but it is essential and fundamental to the eventual success of Silver Hill that no commitment, conditional or otherwise, is made to the developer before the council undertakes and completes a full archaeological investigation of the whole site. In July, the council announced that it was going to investigate 4 good-sized trial pits within the site and that the work will be supervised by archaeology experts. In the normal course of events, depending upon what was found, those investigations would lead to others, but they have not yet even been started. However good the developer might be, the moment the council cedes control of the site, the archaeological investigations will be undermined by the financial and other pressures a developer inevitably encounters. Moreover, the council will lose all its options, including not developing the site, at least not yet, if something remarkable is found down there. There is an order of play to the development process which the council has failed to respect before, and just when it's on the cusp of making genuine progress, it would be a tragedy if it made the same mistakes again. I guess we'll know quite soon. And that was from Kim A. Gottlieb, East Stratton, Mitchell Dever.
Rotary Appeal. We were pleased to see the article in the Chronicle, December the 1st, on the Rotary Shoebox Appeal. However, it was edited in a way that unfortunately misrepresents our work. The opening sentences suggest that we only sent 36 shoeboxes. In fact, we sent 36 cartons containing a total of 561 shoeboxes, plus a further 4 cartons of hand-knitted jumpers. The final paragraph of the article gives the correct number, but we are aware that this has unfortunately been missed by a number of readers. As the article also states, this year some of the Rotary Wessex region's 18,000 shoeboxes will also go to Ukraine. We are delighted to have just heard that 3,000 will shortly arrive in Lublin, Poland, close to the border with Ukraine, where the local Rotary Club will arrange onward distribution, both to children inside Ukraine and to others resettled in Poland. Winchester Rotary Club has a close contact with the Rotary Club in Lublin. Gillian Russell, Press Officer and Social Media, Winchester Rotary Club.
And Peter and Maggie Rees make a food bank appeal. The Tory government has spent the last 12 years failing the nation. When challenged about their responsibility for the current cost of living crisis, the fuel and energy increases crisis, the austerity and poverty measures inflicted on the country during protracted lockdowns and COVID restrictions, their answers are pathetic. Apparently, there are global reasons why they have such an appalling record. That record comes home to hit the poorest and most deprived in our fractured society at Christmas, especially at a time when a prominent MP can jet off to earn millions living in the Australian jungle. At this time of year, our local food and clothing support system, the Winchester Basics Bank, is doing their utmost to help feed and clothe people. Individually, Winchester Labour Party members have voluntarily donated nearly £1,500 to this local charity, staffed mainly by volunteers. This follows a peak time when Winchester Basic Bank was supplying food parcels to over 400 clients monthly. Nationally, the Trussell Trust is also in the front line of support, giving out a food parcel every 13 seconds to over 2 million households. This is a direct appeal to all readers of the Hampshire Chronicle. Many of you will be able to donate some or even all your winter fuel allowance. Many of you will be able to afford to donate something to Winchester's own voluntary social service, the Basic Food and Clothing Bank. Make an early New Year resolution and help the people who are most in need by supporting this excellent organisation now, this Christmas. But also throughout the year, Winchester Basics Bank website will tell you what they need and how to donate. That's Peter and Maggie Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And Mark Rowe writes, online safety. Who is responsible for online safety? Parents, children and other internet users? Social media companies and search engines? The government? In my view, all the above are. Facebook should be monitored more and, if needed, split into over and under 18 sections. Self-harm videos banned and removed immediately. Parents made aware if their children have accessed any unacceptable material of any kind. But most of all, let's all get talking about mental health and other matters. Listen to each other, as a problem solved is a problem halved. Finally, I say to His Majesty's government, take the lead. Do not water down the online safety. Mr. Sunak, show the world that your government cares. And that was from Mark Rowe, Taplings Close Week.
As a Sunhill Fears by Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith. As a city councillor for Alresford and the Itchen Valley, I've been following the debate on the access route for the first phase of Taylor Wimpey's Sunhill development in Alresford. I agree with Mr. White, quoted by the Chronicle in Traffic Safety Fears at New Housing Development on November the 24th, on the impossibility of using Whitehill Lane as directed by the Hampshire County Council. The verges are collapsing, even with existing traffic. However, the alternative of using Tichborne Down would impact more residents in Alresford, very much a case of a rock and a hard place. Councillor Jackie Porter and I met Taylor Wimpey recently about a range of issues. They expressed their concerns about the Whitehill Lane route. In order to reassure residents, Taylor Wimpey and the County Council need to decide on a safe and practical route as soon as possible. We also discussed improving the energy efficiency of the homes that are due to be built on the site in 2023. Now, up till now, Taylor Wimpey has indicated that they would be building the 302 houses to current standards. But I was reassured soon after our meeting to hear that they have reconsidered and the houses will now have heat pumps, solar panels, triple glazing, and high standards of insulation to hugely improve energy efficiency. It is welcome news that a major developer recognises the need to minimise its carbon footprint. We will continue to press all developers to make their new buildings fit for the 21st century. Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith, West Street, Alresford.
Yes, Kate McIntosh says station plan is the right approach. I fully agree with Judith Martin's approach to the redevelopment of station approach, in particular two aspects of what she advocates, Chronicle Letters December the 1st. The Birch Copse landscape setting of the Records Office, listed 2020, is an essential and integral part of the original concept, emphasising and protecting the diagonal pathway, allowing pedestrians a quiet and sylvan cut through towards the city centre. Secondly, her suggestion of Peter Barber Architects, the foremost designer of social housing, as the ideal practice to take forward a commission on this sensitive site. Not only has the practice been awarded the Soane Medal, but has mopped up almost every housing award going. Here is a list from the year 2021, images of which can be viewed on the practice website. RIBA Neave Brown Award for Housing McGrath Road. RIBA National and London Award 96 Peckham Road. RIBA National and London Award North Street. RIBA London Award McGrath Road. RIBA London Award Holmes Road Studios. AJ 100 Contribution to the Professional Award. The practice has demonstrated great expertise in dealing with infill sites, which your run-of-the-mill housing developer rejects as uneconomical. Their designs encourage neighbourliness and convivial streets free of cars. That's from Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
And this unfortunate letter is from a couple in Eastbourne. Hidden Market. Could I please suggest that some signage be placed in the Broadway and the High Street directing visitors to the Christmas market? We were excited to visit your town on a coach trip last week to enjoy the Christmas market in particular. However, unfortunately and very disappointingly, over half of the people on our coach failed to see it. The reason for this was simply that when we were dropped off in the Broadway, we were directed straight up the High Street to the market there. As we wandered along perusing the stalls, we were somewhat disappointed to discover that we'd already seen many of them the day before on our trip to Chichester. Nevertheless, despite this anticlimax to our great expectations of a proper Christmas market, we looked around a few of the shops instead and briefly the shopping centre before returning to our coach. It was upon our return to the coach that we discovered from some of our more fortunate party that we had not in fact been wandering around the Christmas market at all, but the regular High Street market instead. Apparently the actual Christmas market was somewhere near the cathedral. Needless to say, all those of us who had not seen it were very disappointed and not a little annoyed that our trip had been a complete waste of time and money. If only there had been some signage somewhere directing people to the elusive Christmas market, we could have enjoyed our memorable visit for the right reasons rather than for disappointment, as well as supplying considerably more footfall and thereby income to the Christmas market traders. What a great shame and a lost opportunity. And that was from Frank and Julie Woods of Eastbourne.
Mm-hmm. And that was the last of our letters to the editor. Thank you very much to all of the contributors. Heather's now going to read an alternative look at the news because she's got Belgarum Diary.
Grotto geared up with doggy treats, and I've got lots more pictures of a Santa Claus, but as there's only one of him, he has a dog. In fact, he clearly is a Santa Claus who is being visited by lots of dogs, but nevertheless, I think that's enough about all the pickies. Grotto geared up with doggy treats. Has your dog been naughty or nice this year? Regardless of their good or bad behaviour, every pooch can be treated to an unforgettable Christmas experience this weekend. Rural Pet Food Pantry in Shedfield has promised luxury festive experience for Christmassy canines and their owners, with the added bonus of meeting Father Christmas himself. The Pet Supply Shop in Botley Road is holding its first Santa Paws Grotto for dogs this Saturday, December the 10th. Shop owner Amy Cross said, "We thought we would mix it up a bit this year with a Santa's Grotto for dogs. This is a major event for us. We've never done anything to this scale before. It's really exciting, and we are ready for it. We've already spent around £5,000 on decorations, so it should be something special. Everybody always says how owners treat their dogs like children, and it is really true. We see that's how people want to treat their dogs. So rather than people coming in to buy food at Christmas, we thought we'd do something to give back. It's all about giving something back to the community, something extra for them. The Santa Paws Grotto runs from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and tickets are £5 per dog. The ticket price includes a gift, a meet and greet with Father Christmas, as shown in the pictures, and much more. Amy said people receive a gift worth £5 at the end of their visit, and we are also offering a dog deli as well on the day, which will be full of pup cakes, chocolate eclairs, truffles, beer and more. And we've got huskies coming down with their sleds for photo opportunities. People can pose and cuddle with them. We wanted to run the grotto event to give something back to customers and the community that has supported us over the years. To book tickets, you can call the shop on telephone number 01329 833671 or 01329 595300.
Now this week's...
And the second Belgarum item is apostrophe now seems to be the past tense for signage. And there's a picture of a road sign for St Mary's Terrace in Twyford with no apostrophe. I have a personal interest in this. I was brought up in a St Mary's street with an apostrophe. And years ago, the council put a fresh sign and took the apostrophe away. But when we complained, they put it back. However, things have changed. New road signs are going up round the village of Twyford, and some residents of St Mary's Terrace have been discussing the missing apostrophe. There definitely should be one there. Firstly, for reasons of correctness, and secondly, because that is the street's name, according to both the Land Registry and the Ordnance Survey. The map from 1940 proves this, but also adds another curiosity, namely that nearby Finch's Lane was then known, more logically, as Station Road. Finch's Lane is known on Land Registry and Ordnance Surveys maps not as Finch's Lane with an E, but as Finch's Lane with an apostrophe. On the face of it, more grammatically correct. But villagers have become accustomed to it being Finch's Lane with an E, as on the road sign. Anyway, Belgarum hears that a friendly local councillor has approached Winchester City Council on the St Mary's matter, and has received a written reply explaining that the council has adopted a no apostrophes policy for its signage.
This week's first person is by Khalid Aziz, and Noel's going to read it now.
Yes, his headline is Cutting People Some Slack. This time last week, it all came flooding back, triggered by a question from Lady Susan Hussey, a lady-in-waiting to our late Queen, to a woman attending a Buckingham Palace reception for supporters of abused women and girls. Where are you from? The woman in question, Ngozi Fulani, representing an organisation called Sister Space, responded that she was born in the UK. This should have been enough, but the courtier persisted. Ms Fulani published the full exchange on Twitter. Lady Susan didn't come out well. 40 years ago, I arrived in the south of England to present ITV's 6 o'clock regional programme. It didn't take long for letters to arrive inquiring why viewers had to endure the irritation of an Indian presenting the nightly local news. I took it on the chin and read out, live on air, some of the letters, warning the writers with tongue-in-cheek, if you don't pipe down, I'll come and live next door to you. And there it was left, and quite rightly so. No more letters were received. The police didn't go round and try to work up a case of hate crime. No such thing existed those days. I wasn't offered counselling and certainly didn't feel I needed it. Of course, there was no internet then and no social media. What we did have was a drinks party. As a minor celeb, I was invited to more parties than I really merited. Mostly, they went well. I have previously written that you need only three words to break the ice at such parties when confronted with a myriad of strange faces. Air, hair and lair. Run them together and you have the classic drinks party greeting. Air, hair, lair. In the middle class reaches of Hampshire, at least. Occasionally, I would get the odd, crusty, retired major, who, having consumed rather too many tinctures, would inquire, as in the case of the Buckingham Palace courtier, "Where are you from?" Realising my tiny village north of Winchester was pretty much unknown, I tried to be helpful. "Near Mitchell-Deaver." "No, no, 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 no," exploded the crusty major. "Where are you really from?" "Well, I was born in Pakistan." His curiosity satisfied, the major offered a compliment. "Well, your English is bloody good." There was only one answer to that. In my best Shishi Indian accent, "Well, it is amazing what you British are teaching us these days." Throwing in a head wobble for good measure. Laughter echoing in his ears, the major shambled off for his umpteenth top-up and on with the party. I've dined out many times on that story. It's in the compendium of tales my long-suffering wife has had to endure so many times over the years. She still manages a loyal laugh. I retold the story when I was asked to speak at an Asian Awards evening. It brought the house down as the audience clearly identified with their own experiences of the clumsy host community. Lady Susan Hussey has apologised. I met her once and she seemed genial enough. Her late husband, Duke Hussey, was chairman of the BBC during the debacle of the infamous Martin Bashir interview with Diana. Lady Susan was right to apologise. She clearly got it wrong, and I'm sure is sincerely sorry for any offence she may have caused. My experience of the upper classes is that they would rather saw an arm off than cause offence. However, in the crucible heat created by the lens of social media, an apology was not enough. She has resigned. To me, that's going a bit far. She was a long-standing and loyal servant of our late Queen. She is also in her 80s. Surely she should be cut some slack. Perhaps Ms. Filani would take to Twitter again and offer forgiveness and suggest reinstatement.
It's time for editorial comment, and this week it's read by Jane.
And the editorial comment this week relates to a difficult article which we have not included. The shocking case of schoolteacher. Our report today on a misconduct hearing of a former Winchester teacher, Mark Sills, is rather disturbing. He developed a wholly inappropriate relationship with a girl who can only be called Pupil A at a school which cannot be named for legal reasons. In the words of the chairman making a ruling of misconduct, Mr. Sills overstepped that fundamental boundary by a wide mark. He accepted in his evidence that the relationship became more about his needs than the needs of Pupil A. He did not sense the discomfort he brought to Pupil A or recognise the potential harm of his actions. Mr. Sills in evidence said the 1990s were a more innocent time. Were they? We think not. The 1990s was only a generation ago, not the 1890s. 25 years ago, everyone then knew the boundaries. The worrying thing is that people such as Mr. Sills may still be working in education. Evidence to the hearing raises serious questions about how he was being managed, or not, by senior staff at the school.
Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 9th of December at 7:56 a.m. and it begins at 3:59 p.m. On Wednesday the 14th of December it ends at 8:01 a.m. and begins at 3:58 p.m. We'll continue with further items of general news and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Christmas service to remember our loved ones. And there's a photograph of Winchester Hospice's frontage and inset the smiling face of the Reverend Mike Griffiths, who led the Christmas service. This month, Winchester Hospice has come together with its community to remember and celebrate the lives of those who have died through its Light Up a Life service. Residents from Winchester and surrounding visitors... Residents from Winchester and surrounding villages were invited to make a dedication in memory of a loved one, alongside a donation to the hospice's charity. And the service was led by the Reverend Mike Griffiths at Highcliffe's All Saints Church and was open to all, not just those who felt the care of Winchester Hospice, but also those in a wider community. Before the service, Maddie Thompson, trustee at Winchester Hospice and clinical lead for end-of-life care at Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Grief can be incredibly hard, and perhaps more so at this festive time of year. Through the service, we really hope that we can provide a space where everyone who has experienced loss is able to come together with others to celebrate the lives of those who we dearly miss. The evening featured seasonal Christmas carol singing and readings by special guests, along with warming hot drinks and mince pies for all. Prior to the evening, Winchester Hospice welcomed the city's community to be part of its annual virtual Christmas carol, which was shown at the Light Up a Life service. Individuals were encouraged to record their voice singing this year's chosen carol, It Came Upon a Midnight Clear, and submit it online to be part of the virtual choir.
Excuse me. Centre stage at Christmas markets. It's another one about the church. Churches in Winchester are coming together to put on a show at the Christmas markets this weekend. In the run-up to Christmas, churches in Winchester are collaborating to present Looking for a Star, based on a traditional mystery play. The 30-minute performances will take place on stage in the centre of Winchester Cathedral's Christmas market at 3 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. this Sunday, December the 11th, and at 6 p.m. today, Friday, December the 9th, and 3:30 and 6 p.m. this Saturday, December the 10th. For the two Sunday shows, the Winchester Cathedral choristers will join the singing at 3:30 p.m. and then lead the audience into the cathedral for a special carol service. The community project is being brought to the stage by the playwright Philip Glassborough and suitable for all ages. Mystery plays date back to the medieval times and bring Bible stories to life with scenes and songs. Winchester's band of revellers will lead the audience through the Christmas story through the eyes of various characters. And there's a lovely picture of a whole line of people all, I think, rehearsing with the script in their hands and looking at, as if they're involved in the performance.
And the message from the Dean of Winchester this week is about the angels at Christmas. Angels feature in the scriptures of Advent and Christmas. They come quietly at first with Gabriel's meeting with Mary, and later reach a full crescendo with the heavenly hosts proclaiming the birth of Christ and singing God's praises to the shepherds on the hillside. The heavens proclaim the glory of God. And according to legend, on the night of Christ's birth, so too did the animals. By an ancient tradition, for that one night only, animals were given the gift of speech to give joyful praise to God. The beautiful Nativity stained glass window by John Piper in Iffley Church, Oxford, depicts the remarkable event with five animals proclaiming the good news of Saviour's birth. At the top, a cockerel calls out not cock-a-doodle-doo, but Christus natus est. This year, the cathedral is inviting our Hampshire communities to services and events at the cathedral with these words, Let Heaven and Nature Sing, written by Isaac Watts, our local hymn writer, taken from his carol Joy to the World. Watts was born in Southampton in 1674 and became a Free Church minister in Stoke Newington. He wrote many hymns still sung today, including When I Survey the Wondrous Cross and O God, Our Help in Ages Past. The carol, Joy to the World, combines in a very affecting way the deeply personal Let Every Heart Prepare Him a Room with the vast And Heaven and Nature Sing. My prayer in these weeks is that each of us will be given grace to open our hearts to one another, to those in need, and be ready to welcome the Christ child when he comes, and that each of us will open our hearts and minds to the need to live with more care for creation. In his papal letter, Laudato Si, Pope Francis encouraged us to care for the earth, our home, to remember our responsibility to protect the natural environment, and to be mindful of the fact that we are part of nature, not aloof from it. Isaac Watts' lovely carol also reminds us that the birth of Christ affirms God's love for his created world. In Christ, all barriers are broken down, including those between earth and heaven, the physical and spiritual, the created and uncreated. As we realise more fully the need to live gently on the earth and more gently with one another, may God bless you richly in this season of Advent and Christmas. May we all be ready to offer him room in our hearts and lives, experiencing the joy of Christ's nativity. Let heaven and nature sing. And that was from the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, the Dean of Winchester.
Forgotten Boat's New Lease of Life. A working water buffalo farm, situated in the rolling chalk downs of Broughton, has bolstered its already unique getaway offerings with the addition of a 47-foot boat. The aptly named Ark Buffalo now lives up to its title after completing a mega operation to move the 20-ton vessel from a boatyard near Chichester. Back in November, the boat was loaded onto a specialist vehicle before being escorted to the farmyard, where two 50-ton cranes were waiting to lift her onto a purpose-built stand. And a photograph shows this happening, with the boat slung between these two lorries with the cranes on as they lift her from the vehicle that delivered her and lower her carefully onto the specially built supports. Duggan James, the owner of Manor Farm, where Ark Buffalo is based, said, "It couldn't have gone better. It all went like clockwork, to be honest. And now she's sitting in the farmyard, drying out in the sun." Well, she was sitting in the farmyard, drying out. For the last 4 years or so, the boat has been left to rot by its previous owner. However, Mr. James said he was surprised at how little needed to be done to transform it into a space for family or corporate breaks. "There's not a huge amount of work to do," he said. "If she was going back out to sea, it would be about £500,000. But hopefully, as she's staying on land, it won't cost that, though I've sunk my entire budget already. The first step is to get the roof on to allow her to dry out, because she had a lot of water in her. She needs a bit of boarding up to make her watertight, but the cabin was actually in surprisingly good shape. We're not sure exactly what role she's going to have just yet. We've got quite a good array of infrastructures now, and it's kind of pirate meets Mad Max vibe. All very eccentric, so the boat will fit in very well." Built in King's Lynn in 1924, the boat is made almost entirely of timber and was originally used as a pilot cutter. Later in its life, it became a prawn fishing boat before being sailed to destinations around the globe as a boat for leisure. After returning from the south of France and being almost completely forgotten, its value plummeted from around £70,000 to £5,000 due to rot and damage. Mr. James said if he hadn't stepped in, it looked as if it was destined for the scrapyard. "It is a really beautiful bit of engineering," he said. We were all about boats in England and Britain in the old days. Boats were what we did. Above all, it feels like a huge honour to have her here and have that responsibility to keep her alive, if not as an ocean-going vessel, at least still pretty much intact. We had the Buffalo, and now we've got the Ark.
Nurses' morale at rock bottom. The morale of nurses at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital is at rock bottom, staff have told the Chronicle. One nurse said there had been strong support for strike action among members of the Royal College of Nursing, who voted in a recent ballot, although fewer than half of the staff agreed with action. Of the 1,665 entitled to vote in the Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust, there were 703 votes for action, where 832 were needed. In the postal ballot, Royal College of Nursing members voted against action. One vote showed 42% voting for strike over pay and patient safety, but 90% of those taking part. A nurse who asked not to be named said, "It's true that not enough voted to strike. A lot of nurses are now apathetic. They're young and only use social media, not filling in a ballot coming through the letterbox. And they don't want to put their careers in jeopardy or chances of promotion. The morale in the hospital is so low. There are so many people wanting to leave. There are far too many managers earning a fortune. We don't need so many." Another, who also requested not to be named, said, "More than 700 voting for action shows the strength of feeling. Morale is at rock bottom. There is a growing feeling of despair." The Trust was asked to comment, but it has not responded at the time of going to press.
And here we have Christmas Cheer. A Winchester dance charity in collaboration with a community centre is running a free Christmas fair showcasing local businesses and performers. For the second year running, Unit 12, a community and arts facility in Winnell, and it includes our studio, of course, will be transformed into a festive scene with food, dance, gifts and Father Christmas himself making an appearance at Move Momenta's Christmas Fair. The event on this Sunday, December the 11th, will run from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. with a mini Christmas market featuring food and drink from Munch Cafe and a Christmas swap mass brought by I Need a Whisk. The idea of the swap shop is to allow visitors to find new decorations in a more sustainable way. Performances from Move Momentum dancers and guest stars are set to take place. The charity, founded in 2016, aims to provide accessible dance classes to three main groups: the over 65s, wheelchair users, and young people. CEO of Move Momentum, Amanda Watkinson, said, "It's time for our Christmas fair and we couldn't be more excited. It's always a fabulous event and a wonderful opportunity to get the Move Momentum family together. We look forward to seeing you there. We're still looking for volunteers and tombola prizes, so do get in touch if you are able to help. And tickets for the Santa's Grotto, costing £5, include a gift from Father Christmas and must be booked in advance."
HGVs in village may be doubled. Controversial plans to double the scale of operations at a recycling plant in Kingsworthy will be decided by the County Council. EcoGen Recycling Limited in Stoke Charity Road is looking to increase the number of lorry movements at its plant, resulting in 80 heavy-duty vehicles moving through the village each day. Currently, EcoGen is only allowed to handle 30,000 tonnes of waste each year and is restricted to 40 HGV movements per day, 20 in and 20 out. But it wants the council to alter these conditions to allow it to double to handle 60,000 tonnes of waste. Residents are concerned over the safety of the roads surrounding the site, with the scheme set to be discussed by Hampshire County Council Regulatory Committee on December the 14th. In its planning statement, EcoGen said, The site is approximately 2.25 hectares, comprising two large former agricultural buildings, which are now used by machinery to bale or package the incoming material prior to it being distributed for recycling. The site also includes a large area of hard standing, open storage, a large bund and landscaping. The site is accessed via a haul road off Stoke Charity Road. Meanwhile, locals have been submitting new objections. Christine Donald said, "As a resident, I'd like to object to this. Whilst you'd say there have been no incidents, there have been many near misses. The road is simply not wide enough, and it's a danger to pedestrians. On multiple occasions, my family have had to jump the side of the pavement to trucks travelling along the road." Councillor Jane Rutter, ward councillor to the Worthies, said, "I am writing to object to proposed road developments in London, in Loveton Lane. In an attempt by Ecogen to render their application to double lorry movements along Loveton Lane and Stoke Charity Road acceptable. These proposals are no such thing. Firstly, to propose to reduce the width of the footway over the disused railway bridge on Loveton Lane is downright dangerous. This footway is already too narrow, and I and many local residents feel unsafe walking along it as traffic, particularly these heavy vehicles, thunder past at the current speed limit of 40 miles an hour, or more, as is often the case. I completely reject the suggestion that these proposed road changes will enable the safe use of Loveton Lane and Stoke Charity Road for an increase in lorry movements to the Ecogen site, and completely object to both the application and to the application to increase lorry movements."
Walk to focus minds on domestic abuse victims. Members of Winchester City Council joined a Hampshire charity for a one-mile walk to help highlight domestic abuse. The deputy leader of Winchester City Council, Councillor Paula Ferguson, together with other councillors, supported Hampshire charity's Stop Domestic Abuse to raise awareness of violence against women and girls. The walk, which began at Hampshire County Council's Elizabeth II Court offices, was part of 16 days of action across Hampshire, being led by the charity to highlight harm and violence against women. Cabinet Member for Housing and Communities, Councillor Ferguson, said, "Violence against women and girls in any form is unacceptable. By joining today's action alongside Stop Domestic Abuse, I hope we can bring attention to the cause and show that violence has no place in Winchester or anywhere else. The one-mile walk is a small gesture compared to the level of risk faced by women across the globe. But we know that victims of domestic abuse can feel isolated and alone, so it's important to send the message loud and clear that help is available." The council is part of Winchester's Community Safety Partnership, which is made up of public, private and voluntary sector organisations. One of its top priorities is to reduce domestic abuse in the Winchester district. And this is accompanied by a lovely picture of the councillors Lucille Thompson, Paula Ferguson and Jane Rutter, all together with carrying a big banner saying Stop Domestic Abuse. And they all look as if they've just been told something funny, because they're smiling broadly. So it was a happy walk as well as an important one.
And students take to the stage with Hitchcock Classic. Peter Simmons College students are producing their very own show, 39 Steps, taking place at the Varley Theatre this month. The cast is made up of 12 16 to 18-year-olds from the college who have passed the tough audition process to be in the comedy show. The production is a parody of the Hitchcock's 1935 39 Steps film, produced, directed and acted solely by Sparsholt students. The college has more than 4,000 students, but four lucky students were chosen as the directors of this year's production. Students Luke Bartlett, Emma Gibbon, Rachel Barkley have been working alongside Nate Barker, the leading student director. Nate said, "It's a big role, but we've split it between the directors to manage it better. This is my first time directing a show, but I did act in last year's production. A challenging aspect was adapting the roles from the original play into what we thought was best. A lot of the actors have been very good with learning lines and not squabbling with directors. Another student director, Rachel Barkley, says she hopes that the directing role at college will help her with her future career. The 18-year-old said, "It's quite eye-opening with how much work you have to do. We love seeing the connections between students, though. I have aspirations of being a screenwriter, so this is a great experience for that." The 4th-6th form students had to host the audition process for the show with the guidance from the drama department at the 6th form college and have carefully directed individual parts of the production between them. They will be handing out leaflets to advertise the show in Winchester High Street over the next week, and the show will be taking place at December the 11th, 12th and 13th in the college's Varley Theatre. And this is accompanied by three photos, one of a student studying at the sound desk, a very complicated system nowadays on the computer, of course, and two others of the acting team with the director performing and thoroughly enjoying it and learning how to in rehearsal on the stage. And I do hope they will include the music, which I think those of us who are somewhat older will associate with the film 39 Steps.
Zoo forced to put down one of its two rare snow leopards. A zoo near Winchester has announced the death of one of its snow leopards after making the very difficult decision to euthanise the animal because of its poor health. Marwell Wildlife posted on Facebook that the snow leopard, named Endeavour, developed arthritis and kidney disease at the age of 14, and the zoo in Coldon Common made the decision to put Endeavour down to prevent further suffering for the cat. Endeavour came to Marwell from Zurich in 2010 and spent his life alongside his female companion, Irina, ever since. Posting on Facebook, Marwell Wildlife said he quickly established himself as a big character at the zoo, loving to interact with his keepers and showing a keen interest in what was going on around him. During his time at Marwell, he fathered two litters of cubs, including Candia and Kamala in 2011 and Agendra and Animesh in 2013. And this is particularly important as snow leopards are listed as vulnerable on the International Union for Conservation of Nature on their red list. Animal team leader Carrie Arnold said, "I'll always miss him. He was such a joyful character and never failed to make you smile. Indy loved playing hide and seek. Every morning he would run around or hide behind rocks to avoid us. And when we spotted him, he would turn round and sprint off in the other direction. In the afternoon, he'd be even more playful. He would stalk us, following when we walked away and playing grandmother's footsteps, stopping every time you looked back. And then he'd come to a certain part of the enclosure where he enjoyed rolling around on the ground. He will be sadly missed." Keepers first noticed that the snow leopard was struggling during the summer. Because arthritis is common in geriatric cats, the team decided to anaesthetise Endeavour for X-rays. Deputy Veterinary Services Manager Dr. Sarah Jane Smith said, "We examined Endeavour under anaesthesia and found that his weight loss was due to muscle loss. There were also signs of kidney disease in his urine sample. And muscle loss can be caused by both arthritis and kidney disease, and both diseases are very common in old cats. Arthritis and kidney disease can be managed but not cured, and the veterinary and carnivore teams agreed that Endeavour's comfort could no longer be maintained." Marwell's been looking after snow leopards at the conservation site since 1977, and over the years, cubs born at the zoo, including Endeavours, go on to other locations. Now only Irina, the snow leopard, aged 14, remains in the enclosure.
And here's more sad news from Marwell. Bird flu kills zoo's penguins. Bird flu cases have been confirmed in two locations in Hampshire, including Marwell Zoo, by the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA. The zoo said it had been found in a number of its penguins and they had subsequently died. Despite this, the facility remained open to the public. In a Facebook post, the zoo said, "We were informed on December the 5th that a number of our penguins had tested positive for avian influenza. Unfortunately, these birds died as a result of their illness. We are working with the Animal and Plant Health Agency, AFA, and DEFRA to ensure all necessary biosecurity measures are in place. But Marwell Zoo is open as usual for all our day guests and for our Glow Marwell evening event. At this time, guests will be unable to access our Energy for Life tropical house and walk through aviaries so that we can help keep our other birds safe. Our flamingos have been brought under a covered area of their enclosure and the penguins are off show. We have already been taking precautions, including foot dips for guests, and these will continue to be in place while we investigate. Thanks, as always, to our dedicated animal and veterinary teams for working so hard to ensure the health and well-being of our animals." The zoo cases come after a bird flu outbreak at a poultry farm in Bishop's Waltham in February. This resulted in all the birds at the farm being humanely culled. Bird flu, also known as avian flu, is a type of influenza that spreads among birds. Some strains of bird flu can pass from birds to people, but this is extremely rare, according to public health experts. It usually requires close contact with an infected bird, so the risk to humans is generally considered very low. Human-to-human transmission of bird flu is also very rare.
And here we have Boomtown drops permanent plans. Boomtown Music Festival has withdrawn plans to make it permanent at the 11th hour. Held annually at Matterley Estate, it currently has temporary permission for a festival every year until 2024. It has now withdrawn its application for permanent position after the South Downs National Park Authority, the SDNPA, planning officers recommended it for refusal. The decision to pull its proposal comes just days before a National Park Planning meeting scheduled for today, Thursday. That was yesterday. The application was looking to increase the number of maximum people attending from 64,999 to 75,999. The applicant, Boomtown Festival Limited, also wanted to retain wooden structures within the woodland and have minor alterations to existing access on the A31. Officers recommended it for refusal because they said the evidence of ecological impact was insufficient. Their report said, "It has not been demonstrated in the absence of sufficient ecological evidence gathered over a meaningful period, covering a number of festivals, that the proposal would not have an adverse impact on the ecological landscape or biodiversity interests of the park. It is not therefore considered that the proposals would conserve or enhance the natural beauty and wildlife of the natural park. National Park. It has not been demonstrated that the proposals are in the public interest or that there are exceptional circumstances, given that the evidence concerning any potential adverse effect on the environment and landscape have not been forthcoming. Public objections included concerns over traffic, noise, light pollution, and impact on wildlife. There were 83 objections. Tichborne Parish Council said, "SDNPA could not grant permanent permission in 2019 and required a number of years in order to properly assess the ecological impact of the event upon the site and locality." Bramdean and Hintonampnor Parish Council said, "Some residents expressed concern about traffic, light and noise pollution, as well as negative impact in a national park. However, the event is attended by other local people who enjoy the festival." Supporting letters were received from 110 respondents. Reasons included supporting the creative arts, bringing young people to the national park, and it being in a relatively small part of it. Boomtown will return to the Mattley estate on August the 9th to 13th, 2023. In a statement it said, following new information received in the officer's report to the National Park Planning Committee, Boomtown has withdrawn its planning application relating to its permanent festival at the Mattley estate. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the huge Mattley bowl with inside it a vast festival of singers and dancers and different stages and tents and a lot of people clearly having a great deal of fun in the Mattley Bowl and hoping to host 76,000.
Another musical item. Orchestra gives youngsters opportunity to make music. Children from 9 primary schools have come together at Winchester College for the annual Primary Schools Concert, given by the school symphony orchestra. Members of the orchestra introduced their instruments to the audience and demonstrated their sounds before performing the 3rd and 4th movements of Dvořák's 8th Symphony. The children learned about different families of instruments and some Italian musical terms and sang along to the main symphony tune using their knowledge of forte, piano, crescendo and diminuendo. The visiting children also, and there were about 470 of them, discovered the instruments and tried their hands at playing them. And they even had a go at conducting. And one of them had a go at conducting the entire orchestra. And there's a picture of them all clearly having a wonderful time. And one of them trying to blow the tuba. I think actually he's about half the size of the tuba.
Inmates in cells up to 23 hours a day. A lack of prison officers means some inmates are spending more than 23 hours a day in their cells, including at Winchester, with a rising risk of reoffending once they are released, HM Chief Inspector of Prisons says. The warning from Charlie Taylor came after Justice Minister Damien Hines announced in Parliament last week that 400 prison cells, police cells, would be used temporarily to hold prisoners following an acute and sudden increase in the prison population. Speaking on Times Radio, Mr. Taylor said that several prisons were struggling to recruit and retain staff, including at Sheppey and Wood Hill. He said the prison system is taking an inordinately long time to recover from COVID, where prisons were almost entirely locked down for long periods of time. But since then, we are seeing very few prisons getting back to the regime they had prior to the endemic. He added that some prisons were unwilling to reopen their routine because of inexperienced staff unable to cope with more open regimes. Mr. Taylor said one of the prisons still locked down was Winchester, where most inmates were locked in their 12-foot by 6-foot cells for 23 hours a day. He said, this is a Victorian local prison. Conditions there are not good. Cells are designed for one person, but most have 2 prisoners in them. Mr. Taylor said that as well as living conditions, rehabilitation and education classes were not being run at pre-pandemic levels, which he feared could lead to a rising reoffending levels, particularly in Category C prisons. He said, you cannot rehabilitate someone if they are banged up behind their cell door for 22 and 23 hours a day. Prisoners are bored and sitting around on their wings, feeling that they are not making any progress towards the end of their sentence. Former Director of Public Prosecutions Lord Ken MacDonald dismissed Mr. Hines' claim in the Commons that the increase in prisoners was partly caused by the recent barristers' strike. He said that the case backlog causing more prisoners to be on remand had been building prior to this strike. He said, we need to find a solution that brings a greater number out of the system than are likely to reoffend, rather than stay on this treadmill of offence, prison, reoffence, prison. Meanwhile, a Ministry of Justice spokesman said, "We are increasing staffing numbers by hiring 5,000 officers and boosting pay to at least £30,000.
And now pine martens breeding in New Forest, says new study. Pine martens are established and successfully breeding in the New Forest. A study of the rare and protected creatures, previously only thought to have survived largely in the north of England, has used hidden cameras to reveal that they are living in several areas of the national park. Pine martens, a cat-sized member of the weasel family, were once widespread across the UK, but numbers fell in the face of persecution and loss of habitat, leaving populations fragmented. It is widely recognised that they have been eradicated in the New Forest, an area of pasture, heathland and woodland on the south coast, and more widely in the south of England, but a number of confirmed sightings prompted a long-term study. The second year of the study, using methods including hidden cameras, has uncovered evidence they are established and breeding in the New Forest, capturing more than 100 video clips of the nocturnal pine martens in 2022. The first martin was seen in 1993, with steadily more sightings over time.
A dad who survived strep in 2013 offers a stark warning. A Hampshire father who had all four limbs amputated and endured facial reconstruction after contracting strep A has warned parents to be vigilant, as a seventh child in the United Kingdom has died from the bacterial infection. Alex Lewis thought he had man flu back in 2013, but he collapsed and was rushed to hospital, where he was given just a 3% chance of survival. He'd contracted strep A, followed by septicemia. Reports that a 12-year-old schoolboy from London has become the latest child to die after contracting the rare invasive infection has brought it all back for the campaigner, fundraiser and public speaker. Alex, aged 42, said, "I saw an interview with the father of a little girl in Alderhay Hospital, and that was pretty raw. I can only imagine what he's going through. I know my family went through similar. It's tough. It's great that the press is raising awareness. I think it's important that parents don't panic, as it is cold and flu season. But with low baseline immunity, after 2 years of not mixing, things are now spreading in schools, and it's quite a worrying time. Don't be afraid to ask for help and advice. We know the NHS is under a lot of pressure, but contact your GP, call 101, or go to A&E if necessary, and get your child on antibiotics. It's better to be safe than sorry. I am very lucky to be here. Don't be afraid to push to have your child seen." Alex, who lives in Stockbridge with his wife Lucy Townsend and 11-year-old son Sam, is the patron of the Lee Sparks NF Foundation, the only United Kingdom charity offering help and support to anyone affected or with severe streptococcal infections or necrotizing facilities. Health experts are investigating cases of strep A infection after the deaths of the seven young children and a rise in cases. Infections caused by strep A include the skin infection impetigo, scarlet fever, and strep throat. While the vast majority of infections are relatively mild, sometimes the bacteria can become life-threatening, causing group A streptococcal disease. The bacteria are spread by contact with an infected person or infected skin lesions.
Jesus Save Chalk Streams welcomed. The Hampshire Wildlife Trust has welcomed the launch of a new chalk stream restoration strategy. The catchment-based approach Chalk Stream Restoration Group launched its first strategy in 2021, calling for chalk streams in England to be given enhanced environmental status. The plan was built around factors of ecological health, including water quantity and water and habitat quality. Hampshire is considered a key area, with the River Test, Itchen and Meon all being filtered through chalk and therefore nurturing a thriving ecosystem. The proposal featured more than 30 action recommendations to DEFRA, the Environmental Agency, Natural England, the water companies, NGOs and stakeholders to rescue chalk streams and restore them to a natural state. Following the release of the plan, the Director of Nature Recovery at Hampshire Wildlife Trust, Martin de Rienerto, said, "We welcome the launch of the chalk stream restoration strategy. Hampshire has some of the most globally renowned chalk streams and some of the most biodiverse rivers in Europe. And yet, despite their protections, we are witnessing acute pressures from pollution and water abstraction. This year's drought is a sign that climate change is going to compound these pressures further. Regulation safeguards by the government have failed, and now we are at a tipping point for these unique river systems. The restoration strategy is an important step forward and proposes essential recommendations. The clear-watered streams are a valuable habitat for Atlantic salmon, sea trout, grayling and lamprey, otters, water voles, kingfishers, and for rare invertebrates such as the winter-borne stonefly and plants like streamwater crowfoot. The Missing Salmon Alliance, a group of leading salmon conservation organisations, is currently working to reverse the decline in wild Atlantic salmon in rivers across the UK, such as the River Test. The urgency needed to improve chalk stream conditions was highlighted by the Environmental Agency recently with a report warning that rising temperatures were posing a threat to salmon and trout. The Angling Trust's Stuart Singleton White said, "This is only the first year, so we weren't expecting miracles. What this report shows is both good progress in places and no progress in others. The political turmoil of the past year has prevented DEFRA from making the progress needed. We want to see more progress in the year to come."
And here we have flats planned for city centre. Developers want to build homes behind two Winchester High Street shops. PPR Chichwin Limited proposes to construct 16 flats behind 149 to 150 High Street, which are currently occupied by CEX and Phone World. The plans propose retaining the shops, converting the first floor into homes, demolishing some of the existing structure to the rear, and erecting a five-storey building to provide 16 dwellings. It echoes the proposal for further down the High Street, which is a scheme for six flats on the site of Rawab Club on Cross Keys Passage. Both schemes show how Winchester city centre land is being eyed by housing rather than commercial developers. The latest proposal site runs between the High Street and Silver Hill, with part of the site, the empty former Lloyd's Pharmacy on Silver Hill, just yards from the Rawab Club. The application has garnered support from the former city councillor and planning consultant Ian Tate. Mr. Tate wrote to the planning officers, "It is excellent to see this high-quality planning application coming forward. The central Winchester area is crying out for regeneration, and seeing actual planning applications coming forward is so much better than the endless talking which has happened over the last 10 years. I have already commented in support of the current application for the Rawab building, which is next to this site, and I now see that the two schemes would work very well together. Because of the desperate need to breathe life back into this very run-down area of Winchester, the planners need to take heed of how this scheme would work with the Rawab proposals. Cross Keys Passage is used as a public urinal, and worse, so getting residential development will help to deter the antisocial behaviour. So far, one objection has been made from Barbara Cooper, owner of Sunflowers Emporium in nearby King's Walk. The first is the height. Five stories is taller than any buildings nearby, and this has been a main thing brought up in previous applications in the area. The second concern is parking. 16 dwellings mean potentially 16 cars. There is no parking available nearby except the Tanner Street car park. I'm aware there's a bicycle shed available for each property, but nothing for cars. Surely all new builds should provide adequate parking. There has been consultation with planning officers, and a fee of £7,424 has been paid to the City Council. The scheme has been designed by Winchester-based firm Architecture PLB. In a statement to the planners, the applicant states, the proposal comprises of 7 one-bedroom built dwellings, 7 two-bedroom dwellings and 2 three-bedroom dwellings. The dwellings would be of high quality with private outdoor amenity space in the form of balconies and good outlook and views out across Winchester. The City of Winchester Trust says it is neutral on the scheme, but added, this is a complex and important proposal, and whilst the repurpose and improvement of the site is to be welcomed, we note the conclusions of the design review panel. It would be helpful if there could be a presentation, perhaps including models, to both the Trust and the wider public.
We are going back to Marwell Zoo, but this third story is a much happier one. Rare species Hampshire home. Hampshire's Marwell Zoo is now home to 2 endangered animals, and it's the only place in the United Kingdom where the rare species can be seen. The zoo, near Winchester, recently welcomed a pair of Besa oryx, an East African species of antelope. Shanjo and Nago now live in the field next to the tropical house, making it the only location in the country where the endangered animal can be visited. Both of the new arrivals are male, but the hope is to introduce a female to breed in line with the European Endangered Species Breeding Programme. Oryx are well adapted to living in arid areas and can even live for several weeks without drinking water. Not likely to be a problem in England nowadays. Both the males and the females have horns, which they use to defend themselves from predators and establish hierarchy. But only the males use them to fight for mating rights. Besa oryx numbers in the wild are predicted to have declined 52% in the last 18 years, from 34,000 in the mid-1990s to now just 16,000 to 18,000. Formerly widely seen in the semi-arid and arid bushland and grasslands of northeast Africa, the species is now mainly limited to Ethiopia, northern and eastern Kenya, and northeastern Tanzania. The species is under threat as a result of hunting, and the population continues to decrease in the wild. Marwell Zoo is operated by the conservation charity Marwell Wildlife and is currently hosting its first ever After Dark event, with more than 25,000 LED lights being used to transform the attraction in the run-up to Christmas.
Charity partner. A hospice charity will be the lead charity partner for the Winchester Marathon for the fifth time. Winchester Marathon is set to return on Sunday, September 24th, 2023, with the support of Naomi House and Jack's Place. Participants can run for the hospice charity based in Sutton Scotney by running the half marathon, Hilly 10K or Family Fun Run. The routes travel through the historic city streets and scenic countryside, past landmarks such as the Winchester Cathedral and St Catherine's Hill. Thousands of runners are expected to put their running shoes on for the event organised by Rhys Leisure. Event manager Abby Napton said, "We are delighted to have Naomi House and Jack Space back on board for lead local charity at the event this year. We can't wait to welcome their awesome team of runners to the day, who are raising funds for an amazing cause and taking on the hilly challenges." Fundraising officer at Naomi House and Jack Space, Gemma Rolfe, said, "It is a great pleasure to be lead local charity partner for the fifth year in a row for the Winchester Marathon. Every year our runners take on this hilly route and raise much needed funds for the hospices. We couldn't be more thankful to have a wonderful local supporters. The charity supports families across the central south coast of England. with hospices providing expert hospice care for life-limited and life-threatened children and young adults.
And the last one is a delightful photograph of the reception pupils. If you may know that the Hampshire Chronicle always shows little rows of reception children sitting very neatly in their uniforms on the hall floor. This is a reception group at Cheriton School, and they are sitting in waterproof dungarees, thick jumpers, and lovely sweaters in a beautiful woodland area on logs, looking extremely happy at having arrived at school. I think they have a forest school area at Cheriton.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
It's the extracts for this week. Thank you very much to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And thanks to today's readers, Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harden.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithfull, thank you for listening. Hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. Mm. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.